Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and I'm Heidi Moore from The Guardian, in for Brian on this beautiful New York morning. President Obama is girding for war, not yet with Syria, but with Congress, which has been reluctant to back the White House in its plans to strike Syria with targeted missiles. President Obama and his advisors have been making his case to Congress that the U.S. has to intervene to stop the country from using chemical weapons. In a vote yesterday, the administration won the support of the Senate for limited military strikes in Syria. But Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry still have to convince the House, which is not going to be easy. With me today is John Dickerson, the political director of CBS News. Welcome, John. Good to have you on the show.
Hey, Heidi.
So let's talk about Obama's approach to Congress here. Obama and Kerry have made a number of arguments for the strikes. One is that the U.S. can't let Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian leader, get emboldened to use more chemical weapons. Another is that the strikes that we make against Syria will be small, surgical, and won't kill innocent civilians. And Kerry, in particular, has been making an emotional case, calling the use of chemical weapons in Syria a moral obscenity. So far, which of these arguments are getting any kind of traction in Congress?
Well, I think and then there are others to add as well. U.S. credibility will be shot if America doesn't live up to its commitments, either in the broad sense against the use of chemical weapons, or in the narrow sense backing up President Obama's drawing of a red line in this specific case. What's happened here is some arguments. One of the strongest arguments is basically this emboldens bad actors in the region, and also Iran in particular is watching, but also North Korea, and that the United States must mean what it says to keep those other rogue countries in check. That's one of the big ones. But what you find in the argument here is that supporters are kind of grabbing a little bit from each pot, kind of making an amalgam argument, in part because no one argument is just winning the day immediately. And that's why, and that's what makes nervous some of the people who are opposed to this or who are skeptical, because when John Kerry starts talking about Munich, there is a whiff of desperation in it, that if your case was strong and powerful on the merits, you wouldn't have to go to the emotional touchstones like Munich, Hitler analogies. And so that is one of the ways in which the selling slightly undermines the case.
Right, exactly. And it's also given a sense of kind of falling down the rabbit hole. We've seen some really strange bedfellows formed here. Some liberals are supporting the war. Some Republicans are against it. What arguments are appealing to each of those sides?
Well, that's right. So the coalitions are, the coalition's four is kind of a mix of Republican hawks, whose positions are everything from this is America's unique role to President Obama must do more to arm the Syrian opposition and get Assad out, which is further than the president has really said he wants to go, even though he wants Assad to be removed. So those hawks are joining with kind of what you might call kind of humanitarian or bleeding heart Democrats who, like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz from Florida, who in her advocacy for the action said, you know, this doesn't have anything to do with politics, but the images of those babies that were killed, the children killed by this chemical attack. That's one coalition. The other is the kind of the isolationist Rand Paul plus the non-interventionist Democrats, the Doves, essentially. And the arguments that are having to be tailored kind of one by one by one, and the real trick for the moment for the president is lining up Democratic support in the House, and that's with a lot of those liberals who don't like this use of American force just in general, but also are specifically skeptical about the idea if you send a bunch of Tomahawk missiles into Syria that it won't open up an entire conflagration as a result.
Right. And then there's an even bigger conflict that they have to resolve, which is that between constituents and the Congress that represents them. Pew Research did a poll that shows that 48% of Americans oppose military airstrikes in Syria. The Washington Post poll puts the percentage even higher at 59%. So it's fair to say that the idea of bombing Syria doesn't have popular support. That has to make it harder for members of Congress who don't want to oppose the will of their constituents, right? Why would they be willing to go against the wishes of the people who who put them in office.
Well, that's right. And as several people have mentioned to me in interviews, it kind of is, it comes up in every interview I do, it seems. At some point, somebody will say, both Republican and Democrat, is they'll say, you know, President Obama's not up for re-election, but my guy is, or my woman is. And the point is that the president has a different political calculus. Now, obviously, politics is not the only thing at play here. And one thing that's really interesting in this debate as it goes forward is ultimately some members on both sides, when we get to this question of credibility, and some people poo-poo the, you know, going to war based merely on maintaining some notion of American credibility. But there are some members, particularly Republicans, who might not otherwise be inclined to support the president on anything, who feel like this is really now separate and apart from President Obama, that America's credibility in the world is at stake, and that therefore, while there are lots of reasons they may not want to vote for this, including their constituents, that there's a kind of patriotism moment here that they are feeling that will support the action, because they think not to would be too damaging to America's credibility. So that's one way in which they can de-link from their constituents. But the final point I'd say is about that Pew poll. Those who were opposed to action in Syria, 74% said what worried them was that a bombing would lead to a backlash and would lead to actions by Iran and Russia and so forth. There's nothing in the conversation right now that's allaying those fears. And so you have the principal reason for opposition still kind of throbs out there without anybody making a compelling case for why an action wouldn't unleash chaos.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also heard Marco Rubio talking about, you know, potential links that he claimed between al-Qaeda and what's going on in Syria. Are those kinds of arguments gaining any traction outside of a few lawmakers?
The public in the sort of chaos theory, the one of the ways in which chaos can be unleashed is, let's say, Assad is knocked back by this, that it goes beyond just deterring his use or his regime's use of chemical weapons, and this changes the balance of power, and the opposition forces come to win the day. Well, there is a worry that the opposition forces over the last couple of years have become more extreme. There are more members of al-Qaeda. And that essentially the winners would be the bad guys again. And so that's one of the worries, and that's a worry among the kind of people who would otherwise be hawks. And then in the isolationist category, you've got very incendiary language from people like Senator Ted Cruz, who said that essentially America would be al-Qaeda's air force in doing this.
Wow.
And that's obviously the furthest. But that's a version. He and Rand Paul are in a bit of a competition to kind of outdo each other. Rand Paul made a version of the same case, which is that basically you're empowering al-Qaeda here by hitting Assad.
Yeah, it's sad that it takes something like this to drive the poetry and metaphor out of Congress. But I want to tell our listeners, you can find out more about whether your member of Congress supports action in Syria by checking our website, WNYC.org. We have a special interactive on where your representative stands, for, against, or undecided on the military strikes in Syria. Then voice your opinion on WNYC and directly to your member of Congress. So, John, coming back to you, there are a lot of questions about these limited strikes outside of the politics, which we'll get back to. Do you get the sense that lawmakers believe that this will affect Syria's chemical weapons capability, that we can take it out with a few missiles over 90 days?
Well, I think there is skepticism from experts that you can take it out, that you can degrade their capability sufficiently. So I think the idea would be to degrade it enough that it would deter from going forward. But I don't think there's a view, in part because Assad has not only been preparing ever since this became a possibility over the last few weeks, but also even in advance of that, some of the analysis I've read is that this chemical weapons capability was always designed to be very difficult to hit.
Mm-hmm. And we also know that the UN weapons inspectors are in Syria right now gathering evidence on whether these were chemical weapons like sarin gas and who set them off, essentially. But it's going to take a lot of time for them to get to a conclusion. The president has said he's not going to wait for the final word, that the administration has its own sources of intelligence who say that al-Assad used sarin gas, and that's enough for them to go on. Is the president's rejection of outside confirmation helping or hurting his case with Congress?
Well, I think those who are not convinced It doesn't seem like an extra pieces of evidence are going to push them over the edge, because there is a consent. There seems to be a big group of people who believe that the regime was behind this, but don't necessarily believe this is the that a response with all of the unpredictable risk factors is worth doing. And so, in terms of the limited number of days and energy and in terms of making the push here, the bigger hurdles for the president are not so much convincing people that it was done, but that the response is the right one if it has been done.
Right. And there is also an issue of political precedent that he does have to deal with. Last week, David Cameron, the British prime minister, lost his chance to attack Syria. And a lot of people thought that was a political black eye for him. So if we strike Syria, Obama won't have the support of our closest ally, England, and he risks a bigger conflict with Russian President Vladimir Putin. How much harder is it for the administration to win the votes at home when the international community has been reluctant to back him?
It's a problem because you've seen the rhetorical attempts by the Secretary of State and the President to say, I didn't draw this red line. This is an international red line. The argument being, again, let's lift this out of domestic American politics and the personalities at play here, particularly the president's, and let's focus on this as an international norm. We've heard that word constantly. That must be maintained because it's such a moral horror that the entire world recoils. Now that argument takes you, lifts it out of politics, makes a moral case. But the problem is, as you mentioned, that if that were in fact the case, if the world were reacting in horror, you wouldn't have had the loss of the vote in Britain. You would have a greater international community behind this effort, and Secretary Kerry was questioned quite hard on that in the last couple of days in Congress. In other words, why don't we have more countries lining up behind us, and not necessarily to engage in the actual military strike, but to say that they are supportive of it. And so that is that's one of the things undermining that larger case they're trying to make.
Right. And as part of making that larger case, President Obama is in the awkward position of asking House Speaker John Boehner and Republican leader Eric Cantor to back him on these Syria strikes. They haven't always been the most supportive of the president's initiatives, right? We know that. They've opposed him on everything from health care to the economy. What does the president have to do or say to get their support?
Well, and even more awkward is he's relying on basically John McCain, his vanquished opponent in 2008, who he ran against in part by saying, I won't take the country into any more adventures in the Middle East, to help sell this. I think John Boehner and Eric Cantor buy the argument that that this is something this has to be answered, that a chemical weapons attack can't just go unpunished, and also that the interests of Israel, which plays an important role for a lot of Republicans who are very pro-Israel, the biggest pro-Israel lobby has come out in support of this action, and so Boehner and Cantor are in line with that, and so there's a national security case here to be made that essentially convinced them that if you don't do this, this emboldens Israel's enemies in the region, Hezbollah, Iran, and that works for Cantor and Boehner and McCain and Lindsey Graham, but it's not going to get those other Republicans who are the kind of from the Rand Paul Ted Cruz wing of the party, and there's this other interesting group of Republicans. We talked about the liberal Democrats the president has to worry about. There is now Marco Rubio and former Senator Santorum are the kind of traditional hawks who are nevertheless against this, arguing essentially the president blew his chance a year ago to take action in Syria, and now things have gotten so bad, action will only make things worse. And so that's an oppositional movement. We don't know how big it is yet, but that's separate and apart from the sort of isolationist wing of the Republican Party. But you could see it growing as people who want to maintain their bona fides as kind of Republican hawks but don't want to support this particular action.
Do any of those lawmakers have more influence than the others? I mean, is McCain kind of a voice that can carry other voices? Is it going to be Boehner or Cantor that can deliver the votes? Who's going to win this?
No, I don't think there's a lot of vote delivering on the Republican side. I think that there will be some attempts, but Boehner and Cantor have basically said this is up to the president to sell this. In part because with some members, basically what needs to happen is there needs to be an educational campaign of their own constituents. So if the president, and this is a very tricky thing to do, presidents, we talk a lot about the power of the bully pulpit. The bully pulpit is not as powerful as a lot of people think, and particularly in these kinds of instances. But the hope here for the president is that somehow he can create enough public arguments that he gives some cover to some Republicans. But that's a role the president's going to have to play. The Republican leaders in the House are not corralling support for this. Now, on the Democratic side, they are working a little harder in support. Nancy Pelosi is making the case to her colleagues to support the president. And so that, again, is where the president has a better chance of actually using the structure of the party to build support for this.
All right. And for a while, it looked like the White House entertained the idea of striking Syria without congressional approval. Do you think Obama is going to regret taking this to such a divided Congress?
Well, if he loses, he sure will. I think, but it's also interesting. Actually, that's too glib. I think, let's say he wins, but wins it ugly, which is actually looks like the road that this is going down. If one of the things at play here is what message does this send other countries like Iran, and does it keep them from doing anything in the future? What messages does barely winning send? Does it suggest that? In the future, the American response to a nuclear Iran would be just as halting and just as begrudging in terms of any kind of action to stop Iran. So I think if it looks ugly, I'm not sure the benefits of this for the president. Now there is a big upside if he does win the vote, which is that he gains a kind of validation for the operation. But then again, on the other hand, if he does lose, the White House is being purposely vague about whether he would go ahead if Congress does not give him the vote. It would seem incredibly difficult to do if he loses.
All right. And let's go back to something you mentioned about Obama running on being the man who is going to stop the wars in the Middle East. How prevalent is that argument in the halls of Congress right now? Is anyone kind of holding the president to account or holding it against him that he was the man against the Iraq war and now he's pushing for Syrian intervention?
You know, I think people mention that as a kind of as a side note, as a note of sort of how those who support him, as a note of kind of how far he's gone off the path. So they don't. Normally, in this kind of case, people might make a sort of hypocrisy argument. I don't think that's what's happening. It's mentioned kind of in passing. The strongest element of that is basically saying, you know, all of the echoes of the Iraq war in the way that this current operation is being sold, the kind of bold assertions, the reliance on emotion, the kind of little bit of confusion about the actual state of intelligence. One example being Secretary of State Kerry said that the Syrian rebels are getting more moderate by the day. Well, that's not, Reuters has a piece today, that's not actually the assessment of the intelligence community, that they say that the Syrian rebels are much more radical than Secretary of State Kerry says. We've been here before. We've seen this play out before, and that's what Senator Obama ran against, in part, which is the kind of shifting stories we heard with the Iraq war. So people do mention it, but it's more the kind of substantive echoes of the Iraq period more than Senator Obama's claims as a candidate.
Okay, excellent. Let's go to a call. We have a listener who wants to weigh in. Michael from Westchester, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Excellent. Go ahead. What do you want to say what do you want to talk to John about?
It's time for America to leave people business alone, okay? The only president in my memory that stood up to these war profiteers is Jimmy Carter, and we'll see what that did to him. Stop this nonsense war. Don't go and attack a sovereign nation, okay? Spend America's money here. Show me that you care about the American people. 50,000 people die each year because of inadequate access to health care. Fix that problem first. Show me you care about us. Before I believe you that you care about somebody living thousands of miles away, okay? fix this problem first. Spend our money here. Leave people business alone. Let these war profiteers find other industry to make money. You know, stop killing people for profits, man. It's not right. Okay?
John, what do you think of that?
Well, that's reflective of the sentiment of, that a lot of these members of Congress are hearing, and some have been holding town halls, and others have been getting emails and phone calls in from their constituents. There is the opposition to war in specific, but then also a kind of fatigue and weariness among people in terms of we got plenty of problems here at home is the way one person put it. Let's not go get involved in expensive, unpredictable foreign adventures when we've got a lot of things that we could better use that money on here at home.
Right. And that's actually a pretty big deal considering the September that we have coming up. The president has a full plate with domestic issues. He's facing a fight over raising the debt ceiling, the stress of picking a new chairman of the Federal Reserve, the battle over privacy and the NSA. Is there a sense that Syria really deserves this precedence, or is there a feeling that it's an actual distraction?
Well, I think the president and the national security team feel like it's an important moment, and I think some of those, you know, the Fed choice, he'll make it and get some grief, but that's not as problematic for him as the budget fights and basically immigration. I mean, I just don't see, given how little time there is in the legislative calendar this fall, immigration in the House of Representatives, I just don't see it because of the time it's going to be taken up debating this. But and then in terms of the president's time, the fights over the regular budget and then the fight over the debt limit, that's going to take a lot of long, painful cajoling and back and forthing, which means that he and all the members he's trying to convince now are now going to be all that much more fatigued and kind of weary of the grind before they go into what was already going to be, before Syria, an ugly fall.
Okay, let's go to Robert from Manhattanville.
Yes, hi. I don't know why the president and others are not articulating a real politique position here, which is what we want is on the battlefield, in the Civil War, in effect, a balance of power, a balance of terror, and that Assad has been doing a little better because of air power and because of tanks, and that we need to degrade his air power capabilities and do so with minimum casualties, which is from the air, and give anti-tank weapons to the rebels. And yes, they're bad guys, but what we don't want any side, particular side, to win. We just want no side to win. And, of course, by no side winning, a negotiated settlement can happen, and the death of civilians can be reduced.
Thank you, Robert. Well, John, what do you think of that? Is that plausible?
Well, it is plausible as a kind of private discussion among foreign policy practitioners, which is there is this, and there has been this argument that it's basically in the U.S. interest to just bleed this and let it go, and let it be a kind of ongoing stalemate. I think as a public matter, it doesn't win many minds that we're going to launch Tomahawk missiles into an unpredictable situation based on this kind of what might sound a little too cute view of the struggle. I think it. That's not going to change the minds of the folks in Congress.
Right. And there's also a case for intervention that we're going to hear more about from Finn in Brooklyn. Finn, are you there?
I am here. Something that I feel like is left out of the discussion constantly is the plight of Syrian civilians and the plight of the Syrian people. And I sort of feel like shame on the world at this point for allowing this to have continued on. And I'm not sure that a surgical strike is going to actually change much in the balance of the civil war, but I am actually pro-intervention on a bigger scale to stop this. I feel like it's a humanitarian disaster that it's unbelievable to me that people in civilized nations in the West are okay with letting this continue and turning a blind eye because they feel like it would be too expensive or, you know, there's a risk. Again, I would encourage every liberal, enlightened human to put yourself in the position of the Syrian civilians at this point and ask, what would you be asking for from the West? Would you be asking for help or not? So that's my comment. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Finn. And John, how much does that humanitarian argument carry weight? You said that it's kind of a soft argument that doesn't really win battles for votes, but it's also one that a lot of people find compelling. I've also heard from veterans who say, how can we let Assad get away with this? And this may not even be the first chemical weapons attack in Syria. So is there a real sense that we are letting him get away with something?
Right. Absolutely. There's that sense. Letting him get away with something that has already killed, you know, hundreds of children and adults, but then also that he might do again. That is a slightly separate, and if you look at and listen to the way the administration is making the case, actually quite distinct matter from the plight of the civilians. Now, as we know, 100,000 are dead. There are 2 million refugees. That is the larger, just in terms of the gross mathematics of it, that's the larger problem. But that problem, created by the ongoing civil war, is one in which the administration has said repeatedly, this strike, should it happen, has nothing to do with that other part. We want Assad out, but we want it to be a negotiated settlement, and there are efforts underway. The administration is pushing on that other channel, but they have made it very clear that this strike is all about the chemical weapons and not about the larger humanitarian nightmare that's been going on in Syria for a long time. And that's one of the complexities of the argument here, because some people say, well, if this strike isn't going to address that other problem, then let's not do it. Other people, John McCain and others, have been trying to say, let's use this moment of action to not only punish the Syrian regime for this use of chemical weapons, but let's send more money and support to what they call the validated opposition, or the verified opposition, the kind of good actors in the Syrian opposition force that can actually do something to change the nature of the civil war and perhaps save the stream of refugees that are being sent out of the country.
Yeah, well, it looks like we're going to have to see how it plays out in the House. John Dickerson, thank you so much for being with us. John is the political director of CBS News. Thanks again.
Heidi, thanks so much.
And now we are going to talk about the city council after this break.